Good morning. This is April 24th, 8 o'clock in the morning, Wednesday, Hearing Room C. We will be holding a work session on Senate Bill 213, then a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2176, House Bill 2194, House Bill 2195, and House Bill 2199.
I'll let it down in just a minute.
Oh.
Okay. Senate Transportation Committee will come to order. The members who are not here are excused. We have a work session on one bill and public hearing and possible work session on some other ones. We'll start out with a work session on Senate Bill 213. But I think we're going to need some amendments. Or do we have them and I just have taken mine out of my folder? We have a few more amendments. Dennis Rice, what you have in front of you is actually, well, partly my amendments that are now also including some other amendments.
Yeah.
This, as you will recall, is the classified driver license plan.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Dennis Rice from Motor Vehicles Division. Okay, since your last hearing on Senate Bill 213, we have discussed with representatives of the Oregon Trucking Association and the Oregon Forest Products Transportation Association several amendments, and we're now in agreement on those amendments and in support of the bill. And I'd like to briefly go over those proposed amendments.
Okay, let me just say, what we're working with is a bill that has been totally gutted and has our Carol, our 213-3 also include the other amendments altogether.
Right. What you have in front of you is because there were different sets of amendments, instead of re-engrossing on top of re-engrossing, the bill that you have before you is basically the bill that came before us previously, with just a few little technical amendments that relate to process but are not a great deal substantively different from the bill that we heard last week. And this is the bill that has been worked out in conjunction with all of the parties involved. And when you look at it, what you can see is that there is the underlying material, which is new wording, the regular type, which is existing law, and then the small type that you see that's being deleted was information that was in the very first 213 bill.
Okay, go ahead, Dennis.
Okay, one of our amendments is to delete the air brake and hazardous materials endorsements, and to what we'll do to assure that operators know how to operate air brake systems as well as any braking system, we will just include a test of that skill in with our regular drive test. And these amendments are in sections 8, 20, 23, and 36, where we just deleted those references.
Okay,
the other major amendment was the regarding the fees for original Class 1, Class 2, and Class 3 licenses. And the fee will depend on whether or not we conduct the actual road test. If we conduct the test, the fee would be $32. And if we accept a certificate of competency in lieu of the drive test, then the fee would be $22. And those two fees are designed to cover what our cost would be for issuing that license on whether we conduct the test or not.
Okay.
And that change is shown in section 31 of the bill.
On page 46.
Madam Chair. Then is up from what? 31 now for combined driver chauffeur license?
It'd be a 32. If they were getting an original license and never had a license in Oregon before and wanted a Class 1 license, it would be 25 and 32, 57.
Currently?
Currently it's, let's see, 31.
31, yeah. This sheet you gave us
last time.
Yeah, that has the current, but the proposals are new, is that correct?
Correct.
So instead of 49, it'll be 50 for the combined, the Class 1.
Senator Simmons, that's correct, yes.
56?
57.
57.
Other amendments that we're proposing, just some minor errors in the 213-2. In the Class 3, it had omitted being able to tow trailers of under 8,000 pounds, 8,000 pounds or less, and we've restored that. And then in Section 12, there was a typographical error where it had class with a Roman numeral 1, and it should have just been a regular 1. And also in Section 18, we're changing the word identification to authentication. And this is in reference to the security features used in the production of our licenses. The security features are to provide for the rapid authentication rather than identification of the document. And this was an error identified in Senate Bill 100 for correction in other bills.
Okay. I guess what I'd like to do is have you sort of walk through what it would be like to transition into this for someone in, well, let's go to class 1 or 3 or 4. I think those are the ones that
Madam Chair, if someone...
Yeah, why don't they, I guess it's easier for me if I look at this chart that has the pictures of what's under class 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Okay. Madam Chair, if a person presently has a regular driver's license, they will be converted into a class 4 license just upon payment of the renewal fee. If a person with a Class 4 license wants either a Class 1, 2, or 3 license, they will then have to take a test in a vehicle that's in one of those classes. And they will pay just the renewal fee, which we're proposing will be $13 for all classes.
Okay.
If a person presently has a combined driver's chauffeur's license, they will be converted directly into a Class 3 license upon renewal fee. If they want a Class 1 or 2 license, they will have to take a test in one of those type vehicles and pay the renewal fee. If a person has no license at all now and just coming in to apply for the original, they'll have to first qualify for a Class 4 if they want. Then to go on to a Class 1, 2, or 3, they'll be taking in effect then two tests and paying, you know, two fees, one for the Class 4 and then one for the Class 1, 2, or 3.
Okay. What if there's someone who let's see. Give me the time frame that this is actually going to transition into for someone who currently has a who's operating a kind of a truck that's a number three, a class three kind of a truck.
Okay.
And give me the time span for how the renewal system works and what the time, how long it might be before this whole thing is accomplished. Okay.
Madam Chair, if a person presently, say, has a combined driver's chauffeur's license and is driving a class one type of vehicle, big tractor trailer rig, the conversion period will last over 8 years, beginning in October of 86 with the effective date of the bill. As a person, we presently allow people to renew by mail once every other period. We're going to continue to do that. When the person is required to come into our field office to renew their license, which will be sometime between within an 8 year period beginning in October 86, that is the time that they'll be converted over to the classified system. In the meantime, they can drive any vehicle that they're presently able to drive under their present license. They'll continue to be able to drive that vehicle until the time that they renew and are converted to the classified system, which may not necessarily be at their very next renewal period. It may be their second renewal period.
Okay. Why don't you also discuss for the record the way you anticipate handling testing or certifying for Class 1 licenses?
Okay, in addition to our conducting the test, we will authorize certain employers, organizations who meet certain standards by having a certain number of vehicles, perhaps, a certain type of training program in place. Not only will the company have to meet certain standards, but the person who they're going to appoint to do the testing for them will have to meet certain standards. They can then conduct the test, issue the person a certificate of competency, who the applicant will then bring to us in lieu of our actually conducting the test.
Okay. What about, let's see, one example that was, a question that was asked of us was by Senator Thorne when we were talking about particularly during harvest season, people who are temporary employees, a lot of them students who all of a sudden arrive all together for doing this work, and how would that kind of a situation be handled?
Okay, if the employer did not qualify to be issued certificates of competency, we could arrange to have our employees on an appointment basis go, if they had a certain number of applicants out there at the farm, we could arrange by appointment either to go to the farm or to go someplace to meet with them to conduct the test. Is that your question?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Simmons.
How many, hypothetically, how many would you need at one farm to go out to conduct a test?
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons.
Would it depend whether it was Senator Thorne's farm or someone else's?
Well, we haven't really thought too much about, what the exact number would be, but I doubt that we would go out for, just one or two persons. It would have to be, enough to make it worthwhile to our expending that much time to go out and conduct the test. For any applicants, not only the farmers, for example, but any trucking company or so forth, our plan is to, in lieu of them bringing in their great big tractor trailer rig to our office, which they may not be able to get in on the city streets anyway, we plan to go to the truck stops or that type of thing.
Okay. You are not anticipating that you're going to need a large number of people to handle this. You think that you have a sufficient number of people who can deal with this, and I think you're only discussing a very few more.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I believe it was 5 additional examiners the first planning and 7 the second.
Okay.
Well, based on our assumptions, we believe we can handle with that number of people. One of our assumptions, of course, is that half of the tests for the class 1, 2, and 3 vehicles will be done through the certification process.
Okay. Are there further questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Tim.
You maybe hit this, but the difference between a 4 and 3, what is the testing the same for 1, 2, and 3, or it's categorized in relation to the size of truck and so forth from 1 to 3? What does it take to jump to a 3 license?
Madam Chair, Senator Timms, the difference primarily will be just in the type of vehicle they conduct the test in. We do plan to have some additional tests for class 1, 2, and 3. For example, if the vehicle is equipped with air brakes, we're going to give a special test on the operation of the air brakes. We're going to have a pre-trip inspection on class 1, 2, and 3 vehicles where the applicant will do certain things to demonstrate, you know, a pre-trip inspection type of thing, which would not be done in the class 4 license. But
The only difference is the air, and then the fact that the test is taken in that vehicle?
Well, the test will be
for
longer.
For number 3 license, because that's going to impact most farmers and what have you.
Madam Chair, Senator, the test will be longer. We've proposed a 45-minute test for the class 1 and 2 license, and a 30-minute test for the class 3, I believe, as opposed to what we now give, which is about a 15 or 20-minute test.
Further questions, Senator Tam?
Madam Chair, a half-hour test in the number 3 category, which has to do with, do you have those tests drafted yet?
For those? Not completely, Senator. We've got the proposed class 1 outlined and that we provided to the trucking associations.
Are you you're talking about a driving test, not the written?
Talking about the written test.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're talking about driving, you're talking about written. So
okay.
Why don't you get that straightened out?
The written test will be the same number of questions for all the tests. It'll just be the material. The test for class 1, for example, will be aim specifically at class 1 type vehicles.
How come we can't have this information before we, you know, put on the bill? Why can't we have the test and have a better idea of what the impact and the problem will be with farm labor and so forth, so we have a better idea of the type of test that it is, whether it's going to really
Madam Chair, Senator.
Why don't you tell us what kinds of things that you're contemplating asking so Senator Timms can get some ideas?
Okay. Presently, for example, in our chauffeur's test, we ask questions that have to do with laws and safe driving practices, specifically in regard to trucks and buses and that type of thing. On the Class 1 license, the questions will have to do with safe operating practices, emergency procedures, dealing specifically with, you know, the transportation of hazardous materials and large vehicle type.
Madam Chair, I don't have a problem with the class 1, you know, because those are get into that type truck. It takes a driver that's qualified, and I'm sure the Trucking Association and those people understand that, as most truckers do. But when you get down to a class 3, you're talking about a farm vehicle that, you know, is going to be out there picking up onions or what have you, and there's just one heck of a difference between 1 and 3, in my estimation. And the problems we're going to get into is when you jump from 4 to 3, not when you jump from 4 to 1.
Senator Timms, the class 3 test would be specifically aimed probably at load limits, and again, safe driving practices, that type of thing. Probably very similar to our present chauffeur's license test.
And if they currently have a chauffeur's license, they move right into a class 3, right?
Correct.
So it's the ones who don't have that would be...
The cases that don't.
Yeah. Well, the what do we have as far as numbers are concerned? We were looking at over an 8-year period, you'd probably have 8,700, you estimated, people that would be in that particular
in class
situation.
Three,
yeah.
I believe that figure is correct.
Yeah.
That was based on the number of farm registered vehicles now that were over the 6,000 pounds gross limit.
Okay. Senator Timms, do you feel that you've gotten enough information about what's on the written test?
Well, I have a problem, Madam Chair, with the three, because you know you're hiring somebody for maybe a month,
yeah,
or 2 months to drive a class three vehicle, and you know you're going to have to go to a lot of trouble to get that license. Probably in some cases the individual might not even be able to speak English. So you know, I can see some problems out there. So what's bothering me, and I don't really know how to. Maybe we need to have an amendment in there that you know, for a 1 month period or a 2 month period, that they can drive with a regular driver's license.
Madam Chair, Senator Timms. Well, one of the advantages of the classified license system is that it's, you know, designed to assure that the people are able to drive the type of vehicle they're driving, regardless of their employment, whether they're driving it for pleasure, recreation, you know, or for employment. And the person driving a certain class vehicle needs the same driving skills and should have the same skills regardless of the reason for the driving. And that's what we're trying to do is, you know, they're going to drive a certain vehicle, they'll have to qualify in a certain manner.
Madam Chair, I understand what you're trying to do, and I'm in agreement with it. You know, I think you need to classify a driver's license for safety. I'm just wondering how to, you know, not create a problem out there.
Benita is here with amplified information.
Maybe she's got the answer.
I think maybe we should have a special driver's license for those using stud tires.
Oh, well.
For more safety?
Madam Chair, Benita, if I may respond perhaps to Senator Timms' questions from a public information standpoint, I think some of the problems, and for the record I should say, Vanita Howard,
yes,
some of the problems that you're talking about, we recognize, but we think the proper way to address those will be through making absolutely certain that we get the word out to people through publications that we do, through the news media and what have you, that if you're going to drive these types of vehicles, here's what the new rules require you to do, so that
when your renewal comes up.
Well, not just when your renewal comes up,
but
for the new applicants who would come along, that the information will go out very clearly saying this is what the new system is, and if you're going to drive a Class 3 type vehicle, then you need to come in and be prepared to do that. And so I think while there will be some right up front misunderstandings and questions, I think with a public information program and with all the publications being changed to relate to those classes of vehicles, that should not be a long-term kind of thing.
Trust me.
Do you have any additional information about the test questions or things like that?
Well, Madam Chair, we are required by law to include in the manuals that we publish for all applicants for all licenses, and that doesn't change in this law, the information on which we will test the applicants. So we have to put in our publications the basic laws, safe driving practices and procedures on which we will test them. We don't normally give them the exact test questions.
Sure.
But we have to put that in the manual. And so it's...
Now, I think the effective date we have put up to what, October?
October 1, 1986.
1986. I'm assuming that we're going to have some sort of an interim committee in this particular issue area that will be there to watch what you're doing. Give me your sort of a timetable for your rule development and all of that.
Okay, Madam Chair, we haven't given a lot of thought yet to our implementation plan, but we would start working on the rule as soon as, you know, we knew the bill was going to pass, to begin planning for the implementation. Because we have a lot of training to do along with, you know, computer programming, et cetera. But we would work closely with any, you know, interim committee on the development of our rule, and even on the test if they want to be involved in that also.
Okay. Are there further questions for Dennis? We have one person who's signed up to testify also. Thank you. Bob Knight.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Robert Knight, Oregon Trucking Associations. First, I would like the committee to know that anything I might say that sounds a little bit like putting this bill down, I don't mean it that way. We are in favor of this type of legislation, completely in favor of it. We wish that the proposed bill was a little stronger than it's going to turn out to be. On the other hand, we realize that there are times when it's best to walk before you run. We would ask, sincerely ask, that an interim committee audit the procedures of the Motor Vehicle Division if this bill passes, so that you will know exactly what they're doing and the steps they take prior to October 1st, 1986, and thereafter. We would agree with the concern that Senator Timms had, that wouldn't it be nice to see what the proposed rules and regulations are early, but I realize that they have to wait until the final bill before they can really put it together. We had asked originally that among those who would be allowed to certify a driver, that it would be some of the accredited state or federal accreditation schools, driving schools. This seemed to create a hardship for the department, the division rather. Though we would like to have those schools accredited so they can make the test, we will accept, at least in the beginning, we'll accept the elimination of that one group who could classify. We hope that the certification that is issued by the state, by individual companies, if they are allowed to do so, perhaps by individuals or associations, if they are granted the privilege of testing drivers, that the certification is absolutely uniform, no matter who does it. Some mention has been made here this morning, what kind of a test, and this is a very important question. We would like to know in advance, but perhaps it's not possible, just what type of a test will be used for testing drivers. We sincerely hope that it's a very strong test.
A road test or a written test?
Both.
Both, okay.
We would hope that included in part of the requirements is a medical examination report. We have at one time, and I think your committee has it, when you heard this bill first, outlined some of the proposed tests that ought to be used for testing these type of drivers. I can also tell you that Mr. McKellar, who had to leave the room, wanted me to say that his association, the Log Truckers Association, does support this.
Yes, thank you. I have a note from him saying that he has too many things piled into one morning and can't stay here, but that they do want to support the bill, and I believe we do have some printed testimony from him that we can put into the record as well.
He will appreciate that, Madam Chair. We find no fault with today's proposed amendment by the division, one that would eliminate the requirement of air brakes as a separate issue. We believe that every brake on every truck, any kind of a brake, the driver ought to be able to and be capable of knowing all about that particular brake, not just air brakes. The removal of the hazardous materials is good because there's so many other agencies, including the federal government, that is involved in that. And the others are typographical. I have not had a chance this morning to really go through the last draft of 213, but I am certain.
Trucks using gasoline would pay an annual flat fee of $165. Those burning diesel would pay $410. Presently, there is a graduated flat fee schedule that is applicable to vehicles with a combined weight of 18,000 pounds or less. It was established in 1953. A flat fee will simplify reporting and record-keeping activities for motor carriers, thereby reducing their costs. Also, PUC auditing efforts will be reduced for these vehicles. As a result, more time and effort can be devoted to carriers with larger weight vehicles who pay proportionally more highway use taxes. This will enhance PUC audit efficiency. PUC records show that the total 184,086 vehicles registered with the state as of January 1985, 15,842 have a weight of 26,000 pounds or less. This represents 8.6% of total vehicles. However, the smaller vehicles pay only 2.2% of the total highway use tax collected. This bill also proposes to exempt from PUC regulation vehicles that are operated prior to the time they are put into commercial service. This would apply to a dealer or manufacturer delivering a vehicle to a carrier's place of business. Another example would be a prospective purchaser test driving a vehicle. Historically, these operations have been treated as exempt by PUC. However, a recent opinion of the Attorney General's office indicates that highway use tax is required. An insignificant amount of tax would be lost to the highway fund. This proposed exemption would be consistent with the current exemption applicable to the relocation of equipment for truck leasing companies. Another purpose of this bill is to exempt from PUC regulation vehicles designed to be used primarily in an off-road capacity. In the past, most of these vehicles were considered to be exempt from regulation as well. It is now felt that they are taxable. The exemption's wording ensures that operation on the public highways is in fact incidental to the off-road use. Examples of these vehicles would be large construction machinery and certain agricultural equipment. Again, there would be negligible impact on the highway fund. Finally, the bill would exempt from PUC regulation automobiles used to deliver new telephone books. Only one company currently provides this service throughout the state. During 1984, they paid $675 in highway use tax. However, they paid $18,325 in temporary pass fees. The temporary pass fees are intended to offset PUC administrative costs. This carrier is unable to use PUC plates because individuals transport the directories on a part-time basis in each community. Once the directories are delivered, the company moves to another community and hires new part-time employees with their private automobiles. PUC would like to propose one additional amendment to this bill. The intention of the amendment is to clarify the party responsible for payment of highway use tax. In the last few years, some motor carriers have attempted to evade Oregon highway use tax by claiming that the owner-operator that actually transports the shipment on the carrier's behalf is responsible for the tax. PUC contends that the party responsible for paying the tax is in fact the motor carrier. There have been two court cases on this issue. PUC was determined to be correct in its position in the first case. In the second case, Multnomah County Circuit Court ruled against PUC. This decision was appealed and oral arguments were heard a few weeks ago. The issue was focused on the identity of the operating carrier. The proposed amendment deletes the confusing language and will rectify the problem irrespective of the Court of Appeals decision in the market transport case. There are a couple other minor changes that this bill affects. On page 1, line 17, Legislative Council deleted the reference to motor vehicle with respect to fuel. That made it consistent with AMVD statutes that are cited 319.520.
Madam Chair.
Senator Summers.
Why wouldn't they have also deleted motor vehicle fuel in line 15?
The reason that they didn't do that is because that particular statutory site refers to the fuel in exactly this way. This just makes the two statutes consistent, MVD statutes and PUC statutes.
Yeah, once,
since we're citing their
gas and once use fuel.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Okay. On page 2, line 7, we're deleting the maximum gross vehicle weight of 76,000 pounds. Because, in fact, Oregon's Department of Transportation establishes the maximum gross vehicle weight, and we cite their statute. Our maximum will go up whatever theirs does. And this just precludes us having to amend our statute every time the maximum gross vehicle weight is changed.
Hey, Senator Brenneman.
Could you tell me why the large discrepancy there in your testimony? You stated that the flat fee on gasoline trucks would be 165 and 410 on diesel.
Madam Chair, Senator Brenneman, all of our highway use tax is set up that way because vehicles that burn gas pay gas tax at the pumps. And so that the highway use tax is correspondingly lower. Whereas diesel vehicles do not pay any gas tax at the pump, so their highway use tax is higher.
Chair,
will you through, Senator Brennan?
To avoid paying the tax, don't they have to have a certificate, though, that they are under a weight mile?
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, in order to avoid paying the tax at the pump on diesel, yes, they do have to have a PUC plate.
So wouldn't it be more equitable to, in this case, to let them pay the same fee as the gas truck but pay the gas tax, or the diesel tax? And that would give a better relationship between the amount of use and the tax paid on a diesel as well as on a gas truck.
The gas tax is a flat tax attached to each gallon of fuel that's purchased, whereas the highway use tax is a graduated tax that is tied to, in effect, the cost responsibility, the impact on the roadways that weight vehicle would have. And the reason that we have a weight mile tax is, in fact, to establish that cost responsibility. With gasoline, you have a smaller one because they already pay a portion of the tax, but that is taken into consideration when we establish the tax rates for highway use tax.
Well, what is the tax on a gallon of diesel at the pump as opposed to tax the gallon of gas?
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, I don't know the answer to that.
We have someone from the financial part of the Department of Transportation who can come answer some questions.
Well, I understand the reason for the weight mile tax and the heavier rigs, and I understand also that they don't pay the diesel tax at the pump because they have a certificate that they're operating under the other system. But as I understand 2194, this proposes a flat fee for both gas and diesel trucks. And if the diesel truck is not going to, or is going to pay a tax at the pump, the same as the gas truck is, gasoline truck, then it would seem to me that the license fee should be equivalent.
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, the truck burning diesel would not pay a tax at the pump.
Oh, he would have a certificate then.
He would have a PUC.
The same as if he were paying a weight mile.
Yes.
Well, I guess that gets me back to the same question then. If, supposing that the per gallon tax were the same for diesel and gasoline, the gasoline truck with a flat fee who drives 10,000 miles a year is going to pay less than a gasoline truck that drives 100,000 miles a year. And shouldn't the same difference apply to a diesel truck that drives 100,000 instead of 10? Shouldn't he pay more?
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, most of the trucks that we regulate would in fact be diesel. A number of them are interstate carriers, for example, that would come from other states. They would have full loads of fuel on board. They may run right through Oregon without ever stopping to buy fuel.
Not if they're a gasoline fuel truck, because our gas tax is quite a bit less than Washington and California.
That's true, but if on a diesel truck with large tanks, they certainly have the ability to run right through the state without ever stopping to purchase diesel. With the way our highway use tax is structured, they still pay their fair share of the tax to maintain
if
the highway.
Over 26,000 pounds.
Even if they're under 26,000 pounds, they're still subject to the tax.
Under this new bill?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you mean the 26,000 then doesn't do away with weight mile tax?
Not at all. It doesn't do away with weight mile tax. All it does is set up a flat fee rather than the tax being paid per mile on a mileage basis.
Well, it's not a weight mile tax if it's a flat fee tax.
That is correct. In that sense, that is correct.
But it's an equivalent.
It's an equivalent to the weight mile tax.
Well, I guess...
we hope.
Maybe I'm poor in arithmetic, but
go ahead.
I can't understand it. I think that there should be a way to tax the truck that travels 100,000 miles a year more than one that travels 10,000 miles a year. And you have that, of course, if it's under a weight mile tax. But if it's under a flat fee, you do for the gasoline truck who pays the gasoline tax. If you give the diesel an exemption certificate, then he's not going to pay that. And I believe that most of your 26,000-pound and under trucks would not be interstate trucks. They would be local delivery-type trucks who would buy the fuel in Oregon. So I'm wondering about the logic of eliminating the use factor for diesel and not for gasoline. Even though you charge a higher fee to start with.
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, we are eliminating it for gasoline and diesel. Both would be subject to a flat fee rather than a mileage tax.
But the gasoline truck pays a fuel tax
every time
you buy a gallon of gas.
That is correct. And currently in our law, we also have flat fees applicable to log trucks, dump trucks, chip trucks that cover not only vehicles of the smaller size, but all the way up to the maximum gross vehicle weight in our existing statutes.
But those are larger trucks that presumably are all diesel.
Those can be larger, they can be smaller. It doesn't matter what size truck, as long as they're transporting those named commodities, they may utilize a flat fee like this.
It's an option.
It is an option to them at the present time. Now, our thinking in proposing this particular flat fee was that right now, trucks up to 18,000 pounds, all trucks, have the ability to pay a flat fee. That was established in 1953. The technology has changed dramatically in those 32 years. Trucks are that are doing that kind of thing are a little bit heavier. Based on our records, it indicated to us that we should adjust that from 18,000 to 26,000. That would be more efficient for the industry. They wouldn't have the responsibilities of keeping track of the mileage and the reporting requirements associated with that. It would also be more efficient for us in collecting the tax. We could concentrate on the heavier weighted vehicles that are paying the mileage tax.
I go along with everything you say except the exemption from fuel tax on a diesel truck. I think that there's such a disparity in the distances traveled by some of these trucks under 26,000 pounds that we may be missing a lot of income for the state from high mileage diesel trucks.
The way the flat fees are calculated, even if a carrier pays on flat fee, he must report the total miles that he travels with that vehicle. And that would include some exempt miles. Now, we do a sampling study to determine how many of those miles would in fact be taxable. And we calculate then the flat fee so that it offsets the revenue that we would have collected if it had been weight mile. When in some of these narrow industry segments, the question is it better to relieve them of the burden of the weight mile reporting requirements, or is it better to make sure that their cost responsibility is in fact commensurate with the damage that they do to the highways?
Well, I certainly agree with that, but I think it could be better be done by collecting a tax on the gallon of diesel gas or diesel fuel that's used. Are there other witnesses on this?
We have one other person signed up, Mr. Maris from the Department of Transportation. Also, there are people here who could answer questions about the Waymaster and the monitoring system people are doing.
I agree with the theory of using the flat tax for smaller trucks just to get away from the bookkeeping involved, but I'm wondering, there's $245 difference, assuming there's a 10 cent a gallon tax on diesel, that's 2,450 gallons that would have to be purchased before the state would be losing money on fuel tax, assuming 10. Can anybody tell us what the fuel tax is on diesel?
Why don't, John, why don't you come up and join Mr. Russell?
Finance part of the PUC. Let's see, turn it back over there. Slide the ball in the glasses.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Maris. I'm an economist with the Department of Transportation.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We, in principle, do not have any serious problems with this bill. However, from a cost responsibility standpoint, we are bothered somewhat by the single flat fee for the gas vehicles and the single flat fee for the diesel vehicles. Our cost responsibility studies indicate that the average 26,000-pound truck has a cost responsibility of approximately 3 to 4 times that of a typical 8,000-pound vehicle. So what we would prefer to see, instead of establishing the single flat fees for gas and diesel, is to retain the existing table C and D, the flat fees which are currently applicable to the vehicles up to 18,000 pounds gross weight. We would prefer to see those tables simply extended upward to 26,000 pounds. And I have passed out a little sheet which suggests how that might be done, the appropriate fee levels for the four weight classes above 18,000 pounds.
Chair. Mr. Maris, what is the tax per gallon on diesel and on gasoline?
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, the current tax is 10 cents per gallon on both gas and diesel at the state level. At the federal level, the gasoline tax is 9 cents. The diesel tax is currently 15 cents per gallon.
Inclusive of the state or in addition?
No, that's in addition to.
So it's 10 plus 9 on gasoline?
That is correct.
Is 19, and on diesel is 10 plus 15?
10 plus 15.
That's 25 cents a gallon.
Okay. Senator Fye, you have a question?
Did you testify before the House Committee on this matter?
Madam Chair, Senator Fye, no, we did not.
It slipped
this particular bill was in and out of House Transportation so quickly that we simply didn't catch it, so no, we didn't.
Well, it seems rather curious to me. I guess the reason I asked the question is you've got two representatives from two different state agencies who are at odds over a bill.
I think they've settled it down.
Madam Chair, Senator Fry, we're not at odds. Okay. We would support the amendment. It's not a problem to us at all.
Yeah. No.
Senator Fry, we support the basic concept behind this particular bill. The only thing I'm trying to say is that we're a little worried about having the single flat fee, which is currently specified in the bill. We would prefer to see a graduated schedule like we have now, only extended up to 26,000 pounds.
Well, together, that's what I was getting at. I just didn't understand two state agencies coming in before a committee and being at odds on a bill.
No, they've all worked it out. Our committee administrator brought it to my attention and took care of it by discussing it together with these people. Senator Timms, you
Madam Chair, first I'd like to cite a conflict of interest. I think I have three trucks that fall under this, but I'd like to compliment the department. You know, we talk about economic development, and I see very few things down here that encourage and make it a little bit easier for the businessmen. Most things I see make it tougher. And I know the time that we spend on checking speedometer and this and that and sending in reports, and and we put very few miles on a truck in the delivery area, in my area. In one truck we do, but I think it's an example of legislation that helps the small businessman.
That's an endorsement, I think.
Okay. Madam Chair,
Senator Simmons.
A couple more questions, Mr. Maris,
sure.
And I apologize for believing this, but I just on paper, if a truck by or under the old system, 165 and 410, it would be different, but not that much. But you do, on a 6,000-pound vehicle, you've got a $50, I assume table C is gasoline and table D is diesel.
That is correct, Senator. Mm-hmm.
So that's four times, the diesel is four times the gas. On the 26,000-pound, it's less than twice the gas fee. So you're sort of compounding the discrepancy as the vehicle gets larger. But it just seems to me that if a gasoline truck is paying $335 for a year at 26,000 pounds, plus 10 cents a gallon for every mile it travels, and a diesel truck is paying only $6.95 for a 26,000-pound truck for a year, plus no cents a mile for every mile it travels, as related to the amount of fuel it consumes, that you're putting a much heavier burden on the gasoline truck than you are on the diesel truck.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, we'd certainly be happy to go back and take a look at the rates again. I do believe, though, they are set up just about correctly so that, as Bob said, the gasoline vehicles pay about the same toll through the gas tax and the weight mile tax or flat fees as do the diesel vehicles that pay the weight mile tax only.
That's $360 a year at 10 cents a mile is 3,600 gallons of fuel. 300 gallons of fuel a month, it seems a little bit... difficult to comprehend that a 26,000-pound truck in daily commercial service isn't going to burn more than 10 gallons of fuel a day. And that is the amount that would provide equality in the fee. And I think a diesel truck damages or wears the road every bit as much as a gasoline truck does.
Yes, that is certainly true.
And I think, again, that there are an awful lot of 26,000-pound gas trucks around, probably more diesel in that range, but if you get down into the smaller range, you've probably got more gasoline trucks. So I can't understand the reasoning behind using different flat fees and making one subject to fuel tax and one not. I think it would be more equitable to and arrive at a better reimbursement for maintenance of the highway to use the same flat fee for both and make both subject to fuel tax, which doesn't cost the businessman any more to pay, and in fact maybe a little less trouble because he's got to remember to have his certificate in hand when he buys his fuel if he has a diesel. And it just seems to me that this is not equitable to the gas truck or to the state, whichever way we want to look at it. So I'd like to, Madam Chair, have them do a little more figuring in this to come up with a little better justification for a different way of treating the gasoline and the diesel trucks. Admittedly, the diesels would end up paying the federal government 6 cents a gallon more. Mm-hmm. But does your diesel exemption certificate cover the federal tax as well?
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, no, it does not.
So if they go into a service station and buy a gallon of diesel with a certificate, they only get the 10-cent state tax knocked off and still pay. So that would be a material in it. Am I way off base in this, or?
Well, you're impacting a lot of people while you're talking about
yeah, you're talking about
diesel fuel and what have you.
Whole new public hearing here.
Yeah, well, you're talking about changing the whole cost responsibility.
No, just on under 26,000 pounds, and it really puts the responsibility on the one who uses the highway the most.
Madam Chair, Senator John, Simmons, as I said, I would certainly be glad to go back and take another look at the figures. I can certainly do that. Essentially, what I did in coming up with these schedules was simply to take the existing schedules, those are the figures for the vehicles, up to 18,000 pounds, and then simply extended those schedules upward to 26,000 pounds in a nice, smooth manner. Now, it may be the case that, in fact, the rates for the fees for the vehicles under 18,000 pounds are currently out of line. That's something which we should take a look at.
Well, do I make myself clear as to my logic
on
the fuel tax as correlated to the usage? The other point in this, as far as equalization, we're looking at additional gasoline taxes in the next biennium, both locally and on the state level. And that would further compound the inequity if that goes in and that locks you into a flat fee where you can't collect any more percentage of use to equalize the under 26,000-pound trucks and the automobile.
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, the gas tax increase, any increase in the gas tax would also have a corresponding increase in the weight mile tax.
But this is not subject to weight mile tax.
Pardon?
But we're eliminating from 18 to 26,000 from weight mile tax.
No, these rates
would... a different form of weight mile tax. It is
right.
These rates would also increase. These
but
flat
this
fees.
Flat fee would be put in the statute, wouldn't it?
It is, as it already is.
Yeah.
But
so
those rates would go up in commensurate with any raise in the gas tax. These rates as well.
Is that written in this bill, that these rates will fluctuate with gas tax?
That's written in the gas tax bills.
But the gas tax
even the flat rate.
Form.
The flat license fee. Not just your weight mile tax fluctuates.
Whenever there is any change in the gas tax, there is the corresponding increase in PUC statutes where we administer the highway use tax, and we talk about that generically, including flat fees and the actual weight distance tax.
So if the gasoline tax goes up 2 cents a gallon, this $300 fee would go to 600, or just 360?
It will increase whatever they figure how much it should increase based on the 2 cents a gallon, how many gallons truck burns on the average, and they will increase this fee as well, yes.
But it still doesn't take care of the inequity here. I'd like to see some more figures on this, Madam Chair. I think that it's a little bit unfair in the gasoline our trucks, for one thing, and I think we're missing the theory of pay-as-you-go for trucks by not collecting the gas tax on diesel as well as on gasoline.
Let me ask that you meet together with Senator Simmons and go over the figures with him. This bill has a subsequent referral to revenue also, so it will be scrutinized there as well by several of us on this committee.
Well, maybe if we did some more homework first, it would make it easier for revenue to...
Okay. We'll reschedule. Yeah, we will happily reschedule the bill. Okay, does anybody else have any more questions for either of these people? And John, let me ask you about your suggested... What you're suggesting amendments that would restore on page 5 the language from lines 4 to 25 and add additional levels to those two tables, right?
Madam Chair, that's correct, yes.
I think you need to talk about those figures also when you talk to Senator Simmons. Okay?
Right.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else who wants to be heard on this bill? Okay, we'll close the hearing on House Bill 2194 and go to a hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2195. Now, I have to warn...